think I heard somebody say Travis actually passed on that little story I told him.
Yes, he did. And I've heard it before. I've heard it in different ways.
If you would please find Exodus chapter 16 and the first few verses of chapter 17. Exodus chapter 16 up through about verse 7 of chapter 17.
Does anyone have the prison ministry?
If anybody was doing the record checking for the prison ministry, it goes in that box. And he'll keep bugging you next week. All right. We looked at this last week. If you weren't here last week, you're off the hook. But if you were here last week, this is a pop quiz. What did we talk about last week? Yes, yes, yes. Nice try. Okay. The provision of food, the provision of water to a people who were located where? In a desert where there wasn't any food and there wasn't any water. Okay? Why did they need food? They were hungry. Why did they need water? They were thirsty. That's all I need. Would you turn to Matthew chapter 5? Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7 are the Sermon on the Mount. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus begins with a series of short statements, which we've learned to call the Beatitudes. I want you to look at verse 6. It's the fourth of the Beatitudes. What does it say? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, uprightness, another translation says. And what's the promise? They'll be filled. This worked a little better in the first hour than it will in here. My parents grew up against the backdrop of the Great Depression. Their years as teenagers overlapped with the middle of the Great Depression. And they see hunger out of that perspective differently than we do. They see thirst. There was a reason that the middle of our country got the nickname the Dust Bowl. There wasn't any water. Land was drying up and literally blowing away. People in Jesus' day knew something about that, and people in the wilderness with Moses knew something about that. I've got about 5 thoughts I want to share with you. Here's thought number 1. Hunger in this beatitude is not hunger that a snack can assuage. This is not thirst that a glass of lemonade can slake. You're talking about hunger that's right up against starvation. You're talking about thirst that's right up against death. Desperate with life hanging in the balance. So how much do you want righteousness? How much do you want uprightness? How much do you want God's presence? How much do you want knowledge of God? That's really where that beatitude takes you. Do you want that as much as a starving person wants food? Do you want that as much as a person dying of thirst wants water? Is the desire for goodness in your heart wistful and vague, or is it sharp and intense? When the moment of decision comes to do this or to do that, which attitude do you think is going to carry you to godly choices, and which is going to take you to expediency? Which attitude leads you to intense effort and discipline and sacrifice that true righteousness demands? That's thought 1. Thought 2. I want you to go back and look at that beatitude one more time. Does the promise go to the one who achieves uprightness and righteousness? No, it does not. To whom does the promise go? To the one who pursues it. The one whose focus of life is on that. I want to take you into 1 Kings. Is the blessing promised? There's a promise. Mm-hmm. They will be filled. Mm-hmm. Does that promise go to the one who achieves righteousness?
Okay, thank you.
It goes to the one who hungers and thirsts after. And I want to show you a verse in 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 8 is where I want you to go. If you can find before Psalm, there's a whole series of 1st and 2nds. It's the middle of those. 1 Kings chapter 8. In 1 Kings chapter 8, the temple has been built. Who built it? Solomon was the one who led in the building of the temple. And Solomon was? David's son. Bravo, y'all are pretty good this morning. In chapter 8, there is a ceremony of dedication. As part of this ceremony, take a look at verse 10. The priests ended up having to come out of the temple because the glory of God filled the temple, and it was as if you fill the thing with smoke. And you may remember some of the images that you have of God's leading on the Exodus. Verse 14, the king turned around, this is Solomon, and blessed the whole assembly of Israel while the whole assembly of Israel stood. He, that is Solomon, said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who has carried out by his hand what he promised with his mouth to my father David. When God said, from the day I brought my people Israel out of Egypt, I chose no city in any of the tribes of Israel to have a temple built where my name should be. But I did choose David to rule my people Israel. My father David had set his heart on building a temple for the name of the Lord, the God of Israel. But the Lord said to my father David, what did he say? You have set your heart on building a temple, and that is a good thing. One translation said, and in that you did well. But what? But you're not going to be the one to do it. Do you pick up what he just said? Having the desire to do it is something God honors, even if it's not something you achieve. That was thought two. Thought three. I'm told, I think Matthew was written in Aramaic, and all most of the other Gospels and the rest of the New Testament was mostly written in Greek. But I think Matthew was written in Aramaic. I'm told that the word structure around the words hunger and thirst are unusual. That when those words are used in other contexts, the structure is different. And I'm told that the structural difference has this meaning. It is not saying hunger for some bread, hunger for some water. I am hungry, would you give me some bread? I am thirsty, would you give me some water? Do you hear that phrasing? I am told that is not the phrasing of the word structure in the Beatitude. What's in the Beatitude is hunger for all of it, thirsty for all of it. Do you hear the difference? Hunger and thirst for all of righteousness, not just part of it. Not satisfied with some, but pressing on to attain all. How is uprightness displayed? It is displayed in an individual, and it's displayed in that individual's attitude toward other people. There is possible an icy faultlessness which looks down on others who don't achieve the same thing. There is a faulty warm-heartedness that condones and accepts what other people do, even if it's not rising where they need to do. What God is calling for is a warm-hearted faultlessness as the goal we reach. Goodness within, but striving toward the goodness of others, not condemning others when they don't reach that. You hear the difference between pride and humility that comes to. That's thought three. Yes, ma'am.
With that, it's because you can't get just part of Jesus.
Thank you.
You have to have him all. That's not a part.
Because we're playing songs.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about.
Playing songs.
Give me Jesus.
Give me Jesus
today.
And he sang it well.
Oh, y'all heard it too?
I sneaked into the back. I almost came to sit with you. We finished early in the first class. You can hope.
We started later.
We started later than you did. You can hope. No. No. So what's the definition of hunger and thirst after righteousness? Seeking after God, longing for a deep relationship with God. Hear the difference? Seeking after God's knowledge, God's wisdom, God's word, and seeking a deep relationship with God. What is the opposite of that? Self-satisfied. Self-satisfied. A guy named T.W. Hunt wrote some of the things on which I based some lessons a while ago. He used the word yearning. It's an old word, but it's a word that's pretty good, I think, at capturing this. Now, I want to just take you very quickly. The best I think you can do is to write these down, not to look them up. You can either look them up or you can write them down, but I don't think you can do both. I just want to take you through some verses where you hear this language of hunger and thirst and what satisfies that hunger and thirst.
Are we on 4 or 5?
We are still, I believe, on 4.
Okay, just one half.
But it is very easy for me to lose count, and I really don't care. Jesus was talking to the woman at the well. He was alone, and the woman came out to the well in the middle of the day. Where were the disciples? You may not know the story well enough, but this is John chapter 4. Look it up later. Where were the disciples? They'd gone into town for what purpose? To buy lunch. Okay? They come out to see Jesus, and they say, here's some food. Jesus says, I'm not hungry. And they say, somebody brought you food? And Jesus said, my meat is to do the will of him who sent me. That's the phrase I want you to hear. That's in verse 34 of John 4. Acts 17, verse 10 and 11 speaks of a group, and it describes them as, in these words, they welcomed the word very readily. They welcomed the word very readily. If you go into 1 Thessalonians, this is the letter of Paul to the people of Thessalonica, to the church at Thessalonica. He says to them in chapter 2, verse 10, and in chapter 1, verses 4 through 10, he says to them essentially this: you welcomed the word for what it really is, God's words of life. And then a little bit later, he says, we don't need to tell people about you. We're realizing that what you're doing and who you are is spreading so fast, people are telling us about you. We don't have to tell people what's happening with you. They're telling us. And what was happening was they received the word with a hunger almost. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8, I think the central verse is verse 3. Moses is speaking to the children of the children who came out of the Exodus, and he says to them, essentially, people need more than bread. And he words it this way: man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Psalm 145, I think it's sort of around verse 14 to 19. You have to look in the King James Version to see this, I think. Has some of the most haunting words that you'll ever see. The eyes of all wait upon thee, and you give them their meat in due season. You satisfy the hunger and thirst of every living thing. Proverbs 15:14 talks about hunger for truth. If you take a look in Matthew 25, Jesus is telling people, here's the test for finding out if you're right with God or not right with God. What do you do with people who are hungry? What do you do with people who are thirsty? What do you do with people who are naked or sick or in prison? There comes a point where that is one of the hardest questions to answer. What do you do? Giving is a simple answer. I think it's more complicated than that, because what you're trying to do is put people back on their feet again. But the kinds of things that you do at Robius Hall, the things you're talking about this morning, other things we've talked about in here, those, the Bible suggests, may be the most important things we ever do. We've had the privilege of going to Africa 2 times. In the first hour, we've met a few people. We saw a few people in the room who've been to Africa. I know where your heart is, Paul. When we were in Africa, we saw women walking. It was almost always women. I don't remember men. You were leading us on that first trip. They said the men believe the women have an extra bone in their neck so that they can. They have an extra muscle in the neck. I was thinking it was bone. I told them bone first. Extra neck muscle that can allow them to hold 5 gallons of water on their head. They walk 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles or more each way to get water.
That sounds like something that a man would
have convinced
a woman of.
I did see a man transporting water one time. And to his credit, he was carrying 4 of these big jugs of water. But he had them on a cart, and he had a donkey he was whipping to move them through. Okay? Olin and Lynn Burrow, I'm pointing to their picture over on the sideboard. They've been members of our class for a while. They have retired from the active service as missionaries, but they're still doing just what they did before. Some of you who are supporting them like we are will know they are trying now to dig wells in a place that's running out of water. They're trying to teach people how to do solar cooking in a place that's running out of trees for wood.
One thing you said back here that makes me think. We see people that are hungry or need clothes or whatever, so we're meeting that need, but I think what you're alluding to is the thing is, why are they in that situation? And that's where these kind of projects can get very complicated.
Very complicated.
Why are they? And the bottom line, and this is something that we've been doing this at Robius Hall, and it's like, why? You're just giving away things. It's because we can't meet the need just by that. It's because they so much need Jesus.
Kind of starts.
They so much need that. And these things help to meet the physical needs, but that's what they really need.
Sure. It's a difference between giving a fish or teaching them how to fish.
Right. But you have to earn their respect.
Yeah.
And you have to live among them, even though we don't live in
They have to believe you care.
Yes. So this helps, by giving these things, helps us to have a respect with them.
Now, where I wanted to take you in this part, and I don't remember now if it's part 4 or part 5, where I want to take you is you have to want this hunger and thirst is not minor. It's big. Mm-hmm. And let me take you a few places again. If you want to write these down, you can look at them later. Psalm 27:4. One thing I ask of God, the thing I seek the most, is to be close to Him and to know His Word, I think is the way that thing ends. Psalm 42 and Psalm 63 both carry this phrase. As the deer pants for water, so my soul pants for you. There's a phrase in Jeremiah that's repeated in Psalm 119. Jeremiah 29 around verse 13, and then repeated again in Psalm 119 in several different places. If you search with me with your whole heart, God says, you will surely find me. Psalm 119 says that again, whole heart. What does it mean to search for God with your whole heart? Think of people who work at something half-heartedly, and maybe you see what that contrast means. There's a guy named David Jeremiah who I find interesting to listen to. He has some interesting ways of thinking about things and wording things. I heard him say one time, we all have about as much of God as we want to have. And that's the crux. How much do we want to be in right relationship with Him? There's no better test that I know of to the question of the authenticity of my walk with the Lord than this. Am I satisfied with where I am spiritually, or do I want a deeper walk with God? Am I satisfied with where I am? If you hear a person saying, don't challenge me, you get a sense of what that answer might be. God told us not to judge spiritually that way. And I don't. God can use that moment to do things with it. But that sense of I'm hungry for something more is a piece of that. And that leads me into the next part of this. This is, I think, either 5 or 6. Ready? Paul said, I think it's in Philippians chapter 3, verse 13, I think is the center of this, essentially said, I am still not all I want to be, but I'm persevering. I'm still running the race. I'm doing this. That sense of Paul saying, I've not achieved what I want to achieve, but I'm trying. When hunger is absent, we coast. And all the ills of the world will find entry into our lives. The things that happen in life can be a catalyst for spiritual hunger. The problems or failures that we find in life. And so here's the question I have. I'm going to expand on this more next week. I'll give you an assignment in just a minute. But the question is, what do I do if I don't have that hunger? And the answer is very simple. Force feeding. Force feeding. And in that spirit, I want to give you a sense. There is an automatic, almost automatic response. Most thoughtful people who approach Scripture begin to put a parallel between physical hunger and spiritual hunger. And I'm drawing that today. I am not denying that parallel. I think that's a very important parallel. But the parallel is not perfect. There is a complexity here that I want to make sure you see. There's a complexity here that's very important that you see. Here it is. If you have spiritual hunger, you've gotten hungry, and you eat, what happens? You're not hungry anymore. If you have spiritual hunger and you don't eat, what happens? You're not hungry anymore. You hear the difference? Physical hunger, and you eat, you're not hungry anymore. Spiritual hunger, if you do not satisfy that hunger, you're going to not be hungry after a while. Second parallel. If you have physical hunger and you eat, you are satisfied. If you have spiritual hunger and you eat, you're even hungrier. The hunger increases as you have spiritual food. With physical hunger, hunger diminishes if you have physical food. Those are huge differences. And it's those differences, I think, that we sometimes don't recognize. Our spiritual appetite grows as we are spiritually nourished. Now, here's what we're going to do next week. I'm going to stay on this one more week. I think it was David Jeremiah who put some of this background together. The parallel was drawn not between physical hunger and spiritual hunger. The parallel was drawn between the physical immune system and a spiritual immune system. And the question is, what do you have to do to have your physical immune system function properly? And what parallels can we draw? What do we do to have our spiritual immune system function properly? Right? Having our immune system work well doesn't mean we're not going to get sick. It does mean that usually the kind of sickness we deal with is more treatable, more manageable. Same thing with spiritual immune system. So we're going to look at that for a little bit. When we finish looking at that, we're going to go back still into the same section, Exodus 16, first 7 verses of Exodus 17. We're going to go back to the first 7 verses of Exodus 17, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that rock. I want you to see just a little bit more of that. Here's your assignment. I want you to read the rest of Exodus. I want to be able, for a while, I wanted to be able to talk about anything up to Exodus 19 and have you at least have some chance of knowing what I'm talking about. I now want to apply that for the rest of the book. I want you to read the rest of Exodus. Okay, at least get through 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, something like that. At least get through that, but if you can, get through the rest of Exodus. Okay, and next week we're going to talk about the spiritual immune system. If I have time, we'll talk about the aspects of rock after that. When we finish all of that, Then we'll pick up our theme in Exodus and move forward. But I think this little part, the idea of hunger and thirst, and then under thirst, how that thirst was assuaged with the rock. We need to talk about that. Now let me make two or three comments for what it's worth. Back in Exodus 16, hunger was satisfied with what material? Manna. What did people have to do to be fed? They had to get up and go and gather the manna. They didn't sit there and the manna come to them. They had to go out and they had to get the manna. If they did, everything they need would come to them. Okay? When they were thirsty, what did they have to do? They had to go to the rock. I think the Bible actually flips that and says, come to the rock. Okay? What did you hear sung at the end of your hour in worship? Give me Jesus. The rock is Jesus, and I need to expand on that a bit. Before we leave it, I want to expand on that a bit. If you want to be spiritually fed, what do you have to do? You have to get up and go get some food. It's there. Everything you need is there. But you have to go get it. You have to take it in. And that requires some effort. If you're thirsty, spiritually, what do? You go to the rock. And more than anything, I want to leave that with you. Physical hunger, you eat, you're not hungry anymore. Spiritual hungry, you don't eat, and you're not hungry anymore. With all kinds of consequences. Physical hunger, you eat, you're satisfied. Spiritual hunger, you eat, and you're even hungrier. Spiritual and physical hunger are parallel all the way to there. And then they're different. And I want to make, if nothing else you remember for this morning, that's the part I want you to remember. Okay? Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for the chance we have to come together and look at your word. And I pray especially this morning that you will help each one of us, me included, to understand what it means to be hungry and thirsty for right relationship with you. Hungry and thirsty to be the kind of people you want us to be. Desperate, realizing that without you, we have no hope. All this we pray in your Son's name.